This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. My guest today is none other than Jim Hightower, the leading progressive populist in the country. He's a writer. He's a radio guy. He's an agitator. He's an orator. He's a humorist. His father is Mark Twain. His sister, Molly Ivins.
I like that.
He's the author of a lot of books, most recently with his partner, Susan DeMarco, one called Swim Against the Current, Even Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. He also publishes a newsletter called The Hightower Lowdown. You can get that at hightowerlowdown.org. Jim, welcome back to Progressive.
Thank you, Radio. Matt. Great to be back with you.
It's great always to see you and to hear you with that beautiful voice of yours. Last year, toward the end of the campaign, you wrote about Obama extolling his virtues. This was one line that jumped out at me. I might have to eat these words later, but I think he has a deep core of progressive values. Do you still believe that? And
yeah, I do. Unfortunately, he's not exercising that core in office, and I have not quite figured it out.
I mean, that is the puzzle for all of us.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think we can spend a whole lot of time figuring it out. That's not worth it. Rather, we have got to be more aggressive than we have been, and we've got to get real about this. You know, too many progressive groups, particularly the big organizations in Washington, have kind of asked us to be quiet, don't rock the boat, you know, give him plenty of reins to go. And we've been doing that. But we can't just crank back in the lazy boy and do a bunch of 12-ounce elbow bends, you know, out here. Because while we've been quiet, we have seen the Wall Street bailout. That is an atrocity, in my view. We have seen these billions of dollars and thousands of lives on both sides being lost over in Afghanistan now as the Obama war takes hold. We have seen health care, single-payer health care, taken off the table because we were quiet at the very start of the debate on health care. We have seen too little in the way of genuine progressive action, and even when progressive action is taken, sort of half-hearted half steps. And so I think, you know, in the Thomas Paine tradition, we progressives have got to assert ourselves. We've got to become quite noisy.
Why do you think we've been so quiet?
Well, because we want Obama to succeed, and we see the forces arrayed against him. We see the 13,000 corporate lobbyists that are in Washington, 3,000 of whom work for Wall Street, for example. We have seen the recalcitrant, reactionary, Rush Limbaugh-breathed Republicans who are just desperate to see him fail and are doing everything they possibly can to make that happen. And we've seen too many of our weak-kneed, milquetoast, corporatized Democrats keep insisting that he back up. Some of those Democrats, Matt, are, you know, weaker than Canadian hot sauce when it comes to standing up for Democratic principles, Democratic constituencies, Democratic issues. So we have got to be the outside force against the insidious insiders that have, I don't know if captured is the right word, but have taken over the Obama presidency and made him way too meek and weak. And we have got to back him up when he's right, which he is on a number of issues and occasions, but then buck him up to be much, much stronger in going after the powers that be, much more Rooseveltian, whether you want Teddy or FDR, it doesn't matter.
But he doesn't.
One.
He seems to back away from that so much. I mean, he still seems to have the illusion that you can work in a bipartisan manner.
Yeah, we saw that in his recent address to the Congress. You know, there he was still appealing, you know. And here's the guy shouts out at him, you know, liar.
Imagine what would have happened if a Democratic legislator had done that when Bush was president.
Well, you know, I've got to say, I'm not offended by that guy shouting out. And I wish some people had shouted out at Bush when he was up there lying bald-faced about weapons of mass destruction and right on down the line.
But if they'd done that, they'd have been
tarred
and feathered.
Oh, yeah. The right-wing media would have been just all over any Democrat who had stood up. But again, that's what I'm saying. It's time to be less polite, and it's time to get rude if necessary, but get in the streets and certainly get on the internet, and let's use this technology to that organized Obama's campaign, by the way, created Obama, really, as a presidential candidate. And we've got to put that to work again to make Obama better than he otherwise is going to be.
But we can't just send emails to each other and exchange instant messages.
Exactly.
We got to do what the teabaggers are doing.
Exactly, yeah. And we've got to organize and speak out again and again, forcefully, insistently, demandingly, and say, you know, we are the Democratic Party, and we certainly are the progressive spirit, the little d democratic spirit of our country. And to me, Matt, the reason for this is because we actually have a chance to do something now. As you know, we don't get many chances in a lifetime to actually make a difference, to do something big. For example, on health care. Now they're talking about taking public option off the table. Well, it never should have been public option. It should, of course, been single payer. But even that's convoluted. We should have just said Medicare for everyone. That's what we're for. You know, people would have gotten it. And we got to get better at telling the story, articulating what it is we're actually for, and framing the debate. You mentioned the teabaggers. I'm not all that offended by the teabaggers. I think they're being confused and used. But nonetheless, the spirit is right. The unaccepting, questioning spirit that is the essence of democracy, and I don't blame them. I don't even blame the right wing. I blame our side because we have not framed that debate. We have not been out there working with those folks who do have a lot of legitimate gripes, beginning with that Wall Street bailout and an economy that is really a tinkle down economic system still today with a Democrat and a Democratic Congress. We have this chance to make a big difference, and having that chance, I think we have an extraordinary responsibility to toughen up and make the best of it.
I'm speaking with Jim Hightower of the Hightower Lowdown, the author of Swim Against the Current. Jim Hightower is a leading progressive voice in this country. You're listening to Progressive Radio, and I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at The Progressive. We do have a chance. Obama has a chance. The Democrats have a chance. Progressives have a chance to make a change. The question is whether we're going to do it or not, and what is the content of that change on health care if that public option is not going to be there in the ultimate bill. The question then will be, is the ultimate bill we're supporting? And there may be a couple things in there that, if actually come true, would make a big difference. If people can't get kicked out, you know, for having a pre-existing condition or
right.
Or, you know, get their health care taken away from them, even though they've been paying every month. And then they say, oops, you lied to us about, you know, having two pimples. That would be an improvement, certainly.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm for that. I've come to think of Obama now as a transitional president. The movement is still out there. I mean, people overwhelmingly want fundamental change on health care. They don't want this Afghan war. They want a green jobs economy. They stand for what it is we stand for. And we have to do a better job of organizing and pushing and recognize that, you know, we might not get there with Obama, but I think we'll make some advances. At least the debate's now changed, right? I mean,
so
it's our issues.
Transitional president to what?
To a better president.
To a more progressive president.
Yeah, right. You know, we've been making gains for a long time. Obama didn't invent change. There were changes in 2006 election, big ones, even in my state of Texas. 2006 in Dallas County, for example, we had no Democrat countywide office holder, none, not judges, not county treasurer, et cetera, but a grassroots campaign that was well-funded, recruited candidates, and put them out there with good issues, and did the door-to-door basic gut level, grunt level politics of old. And the result was that every county office is now held by a Democrat. We have a lesbian Latina sheriff in Dallas County, for example.
Must be driving the Bushes crazy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm sure they've got blockades over at the Bush compound. But anyway, it's we have been making changes. We are making advances all across the country. And we just have to keep pushing. My friend Willie Nelson says the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese. You know, so democracy doesn't happen in one blow. And we have been making these advances, and we just have to recognize, Obama might disappoint us, but let's get what we can out of him and then keep pushing, organizing, and put some better people in office, including running against Democrats in the primaries.
Which Democrats do you want to run against?
Oh, well, we'll start with Max Baucus, or any of the blue
dog.
The
amazing thing about Max Baucus that I just recently saw was two of his former chiefs of staff went to be lobbyists for the insurance companies, right. And he meets with them all the time now.
Exactly, and is raising money from them even as he is writing the health care bill. I mean, this is, if this was a Republican doing it, we would be all over him, and we need to be all over him. That is wrong. That is unethical. It is corrupt.
I mean, that's the big problem of money in politics, but we don't seem to be solving that one with.
Well, that's the big change. And by the way, we have some good initiative there. Dick Durbin out of Illinois, Senator, has a very good bill that works with a public campaign, the national organization that has been working with various states and cities to provide public financing alternative for our elections. And Durbin is carrying that legislation in the Senate. It's got strong co-sponsorship over in the House side as well. That's one we definitely have got to get behind because, again, we have a chance to pass it. The public is overwhelmingly for it. These are not just states like, California doesn't have it, for example. New York doesn't have it. It's come from North Carolina and Arizona and New Mexico, Maine, Connecticut, these sort of places. A lot of cities around have it as well now. So people want it. They get behind it, make it happen. And so that's one we don't have to wait on the powers that be. We can just make that happen ourselves.
That's Jim Hightower you're listening to. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. On public finance, or campaign finance anyway, the U.S. Supreme Court may deal us a huge setback. This would roll the clock back to the early part of the 20th century.
Really goes back to the founders. It will roll it past them because what the court is, and Justice Roberts in the lead, the Chief Justice, who said, by the way, at his hearing, his confirmation hearing in the Senate, that he was going to be a judge of modesty and humility. And certainly oppose legislating from the bench. And instead, he is legislating from the bench, leading Scalia and Alito and Kennedy and Clarence Thomas, along with him, to be a 5-4 majority that would change, as you say, decades of precedent by the courts themselves, and going back to the founders, to allow corporations to use their corporate monies to put into campaigns against candidates, for or against candidates. That means, for example, that the insurance giants not only could have their executives pool up their money, as we now do with political action committees, and contribute to campaigns, but to use the insurance premiums that you and I pay into those companies and put those, billions of dollars would be allowed to be spent. Matt, the founders feared were appalled by corporate power for a couple of reasons. One, the corporations can amass far more money than any other institutions in our society and destroy democracy. And secondly, the idea of corporation is that you separate the owners of the corporation from the actions of the corporation. They have no personal liability for the actions. That's a very dangerous thing to have happen. And now corporate power has surged, of course, and Roberts and them intend to just unleash that power on our political system. The founders prohibited corporations from engaging in politics here in Wisconsin, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a joke if that – I mean, Jefferson and Lincoln and, of course, fighting by La Follette spent a lot of their career, La Follette's whole career, fighting corporate power and trying to restrict the influence of corporate power, not only on the economy but on the political system that would be just so enormously corrupted. If you think it's bad now, it would just be horrible then. Oh. But we'll see how that one turns out. You've done a lot of writing over the last 6 months, Jim Hightower, on the economy. Which you now call this economic recovery a hoax. Why is that?
Well, because there's no recovery at the grassroots level. Wall Street's recovering thanks to several trillion dollars of public funds that have been committed to them. But small business hasn't recovered. Working families are down. Unemployment, not only is it about to top 10%, the highest in decades, but the discouraged workers who have been unemployed so long that they've given up looking, and the underemployed, people who are working part-time but need and want full-time work. When you add all those up, you're talking about 30 million Americans, about 20% of our population, right there. Healthcare still is not out there for families. The economic activity continues to flow to the top, and workaday America, which is where the strength of our country actually is, and big surprise, since their wages are stagnant and actually falling, household income is down, joblessness is a threat to so many people, families, that they're not spending. So the vaunted consumer economy that is supposed to sustain, 70% of our economy, is not there. So anybody, you know, and yet you've got Bernanke reappointed, the head of the Federal Reserve, by Obama. And this is a guy who helped to cause the crash.
Yeah, I mean, he was recently beatified, practically.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and why wouldn't they? they love him. And so anybody that is being cheered by Wall Street, that sends a little message to you as to who they're going to serve.
Now, Obama could have done better on this economic recovery thing if he sent more money instead of the $800 billion, if he had spent more, if he had sent more over to the states, who are having to cut savagely on their own projects and on their own payrolls. But he fell short on that, and not only is hurting his political popularity, but it's just destroying the economy at the grassroots.
Yes, and he could have done better, too, by instead of allowing the banksters who caused this crash through their own greed, instead of allowing them to keep their jobs, which is outrageous, he should have fired a bunch of them. I think we could have let not the whole system crash, of course, but sent a message that this kind of behavior is not going to be rewarded by letting a couple more of those banks fail. But even more importantly, of using this opportunity to decentralize the banking system. Because of the community banks, the credit unions, independent banks largely, smaller operations, they're not the ones in trouble. They didn't do this speculation. And that's where we should be putting our financial trust, and down at the grassroots level. And this was an opportunity to decentralize our whole financial system.
You know, I was out in Kentucky last fall at about this time, and I was visiting the great poet and essayist Wendell Berry, and had been on the board of the local community bank or county bank, and now his daughter had been on the board for a while. And I said, is the bank there having trouble? No, we're not having any trouble whatsoever, because they didn't send the mortgages down the stream, and they didn't try to get people into bad loans.
Slice them and dice them and sell them off to people in Abu Ghraib. I mean, not Abu Ghraib, Abu Dhabi.
Wherever
they go. You know.
I mean, and the other thing that really just infuriates me about the bank bailout is here, the U.S. government had tremendous leverage over these banks, who, if the United States didn't pour hundreds of billions of dollars in just cash and trillions in guarantees, they'd have been bankrupt. And essentially, we overpaid for Citibank. We could have been owning and running right now.
Of course.
And we got not a single decent concession except for that cap on salaries, but no concession that actually helped working people.
And that's a hoax. I mean, because, it only applies to a few, and they can get out of it very easy. And so they've done nothing. They could have also gone after the practices of the banks, and they've not done that. They've essentially recreated the system and said, it's okay. I think it's something like $12 trillion behind these institutions. And yet, we still have not even required that they tell us what they're doing with the money, how they're spending it. And this is just an outrage. You know, basically we have said that the banks can run us rather than us run them.
Yeah, it was a game of chicken, and we blinked, or Obama blinked, or yep. Geithner blinked. Yep. Oh, it looks like he's blinking all the time. But.
Right, yeah. Timmy.
Yeah. Listen, I want to talk a little bit, maybe more theoretically, Jim Hightower, about populism, because you wrote both in the Hightower Lowdown and in your column on the last page, The Anchor, the Progressive magazine, which I'm grateful for every month, that populism is misunderstood. How?
Well, the media has bought the notion that anybody who is noisy and angry, who has some grassroots popularity, is therefore a populist. So they say Sarah Palin is a populist, Newt Gingrich is a populist, Rush Limbaugh is a populist. Well, no. Populism is a thing. It has a history. And that history came out of the 1870s, 1880s, when hard-pressed farmers and urban workers, by the way, teamed up to try to take the economy back from the robber barons of that day by first empowering people economically. They created the cooperative movement, or they extended the idea of cooperative enterprise, and it became a huge movement. And they educated people. It had a cultural component to it, and then ultimately it had a political component. They created the People's Party. And that party was for first to support suffrage for women, the first to call for wage and hour laws for workers, minimum wage, the first to call for direct election of senators, back then the legislature elected senators, the first to call for a number of reforms across the board. And they mounted not only viable campaigns, they elected governors, they elected state legislative majorities, and they were on the move, so much on the move that the system then cracked down on them. The bankers united to squeeze the credit of the co-ops and destroy those. But these were people who took on concentrated economic power. Who took on the corporations and the banks. Rush Limbaugh doesn't do that. Newt Gingrich doesn't do that. Sarah Palin's not going to do that. So populism can't just be applied as some sort of a garment that you wear. It is a belief system, and it's the empowering of ordinary people to fight entrenched moneyed interests.
So it's not just that attitude. It's an ideology. It's an anti-corporate ideology. And yet some of these teabaggers are being called populists. How would you react to that?
Well, I think some are. I think that not the organizing of it, because that's being done by right-wing front groups that are corporate funded, by the way, and then being spread by the right-wing radio yackers, and then also by the Republican Party. But a number of the people, when you see 1,000 people showing up, you know, a sizable percentage of them, maybe a majority, are there in honest frustration. Unfortunately, acting a good bit out of ignorance, as we see with the claim that, well, I don't want the government running my Medicare. You know? So there's that at work. But a lot of them are out there because they've seen this Wall Street bailout, and they know that these bankers crashed their economic possibilities and their families and their kids, and yet they're getting the bailout. They're still in charge, and unemployment is rising, and economic activity is dead at the grassroots level.
If you were to get to the podium or just go one-on-one with one of these right-wing grassroots people, what would you tell them? And do you think you can talk to them?
No. I mean, if you're talking about Sean Hannity or
No, I'm not talking about about the guys with the microphones. I'm talking about the people who show up at these town hall meetings.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You can definitely talk to them. And by the way, I don't blame the right wing, and I don't blame those people for sure. I blame us because we've not done a good job of articulating, of getting on their side. I mean, we have everything going for us. But we are the ones who oppose that corporate power and that banking arrogance and avarice. And we have the positions that we need to decentralize that and put control of those banks in your community, in your hands. Yeah, they'd agree with that. You know,
I mean, I remember Medea Benjamin at about April 14th when she saw the April 15th teabag things being organized. She said, we should be right out there. We should
absolutely
be saying this is a terrible bank bailout.
Absolutely. And we should have been in front of that. And that's what I'm saying now, is that we progressives – cannot sit back and think that Obama and a Democratic majority in both houses of Congress is going to make the difference for us. We're seeing they're not doing it, and they're going the opposite way. So we have now got to get out front and begin to have some of our own rallies. Let's go to some of those congressional districts where the Republicans are selling us out, or the Blue Dog Democrats are selling us out, and let's have confrontations at their town hall meetings and say, "What the hell are you doing? You're not on our side."
I'm speaking with Jim Hightower, of course. He's the author of Swim Against the Current, Even Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. He publishes the Hightower Lowdown that you can get at hightowerlowdown.org, and he's just one of the best organizers we've got in this country right now, and he's walked more picket lines than Joe Hill, I think, at this stage. Tell me about the labor movement, though. It's just it's been so torn by internal dissension, first with the split off, and now even within the split off. I mean, what is going on there, and what hope is there within organized labor, which has always been a crucial aspect of the progressive movement?
You can't have a strong progressive movement in this country without organized labor. They have the credibility, they have resources, they have members. It's common to say, oh, well, labor's weak. Well, it's 13 million people. That's bigger than most churches, for example. I mean, it's not weak. It has strength. And Yes, there is dissension, and I try not to get in the middle of any of that. I don't know what's going on in a lot of those heads, but I am encouraged. Rich Trumka is going to be the new president of the AFL-CIO, comes out of the Mine Workers Union, gutsy guy, mine worker himself. His father was a mine worker, so he knows from whence he came, and he's true to those principles. So I think you're going to see a kind of new activism and new boldness. Again, there'll be dissension within, but you know that's the nature of little d democratic organizations. So you know we just have to put up with that. But again, you know we don't have to create a progressive movement. It's already there. We have everybody from environmentalists to labor to progressive farm groups and food folks to people outraged by this and that. So we have the folks, we have the issues, we've got the majority, but we're not connected and we're not standing up in the right fashion. And I don't quite know how to make that happen. But that has to be our focus, I think. Instead of having meetings where we get together and talk about issues, we need to talk about strategy and mobilizing and organizing.
Across issues.
Yes.
One issue we haven't talked much about, Jim Hightower, is the peace movement. Yep. You mentioned Afghanistan as Obama's war, and the Move On folks have been pretty quiet about Afghanistan. Cindy Sheehan hasn't been quiet, but that's one person that's not a movement. And there are, in every community, peace activists who go out once a week at the
Absolutely.
Street corners and the major intersections of their towns and cities. So I don't want to belittle that great work that they're doing, but the peace movement just doesn't seem that vocal or visible right now.
I think we're going to have a surge. I hate to use that term, but in that activism, though, because a key point is coming up where the Congress is being asked to authorize additional spending and perhaps additional troops in Afghanistan, and there's a rebellion within the Congress. Carl Levin, the chair of the oversight committee of the military budget is saying he's not for increasing the effort in Afghanistan. And so I also think there's now going to be more media attention. Of course, Progressive Magazine has been doing that, and Katrina Vandenhoevel at Nation, Tom Hayden's been doing great work. So we do have a lot of voices out there that are explaining what the hell this is. The American people, you know, we've been told, well, we got to go fight the Taliban. Well, who the hell is the Taliban? The Taliban's not one thing. It's a bunch of different folks. And most of them, by the way, are not religious nuts. They're nationalists. And so we're fighting, instead of counterterrorism, we're now into counterinsurgency. And these are insurgents like some of the colonists were in the 1790s or 1780s, 70s, and back in there. So we have, we've got to do a lot of understanding of what is going on over there, and therefore what is our national interest. They say, well, we're there to make sure that, try to get Osama bin Laden and to stop al-Qaeda. Well, al-Qaeda is not in Afghanistan. It's now in Pakistan, but it's also in Morocco and in Somalia and Sudan, and it's in Lyon, France, and other places.
So that's not going to be conquered by conquering Afghanistan, which is unconquerable anyway.
Yeah, but start with that.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, Jim Hightower. It's been a pleasure having you.
Always fun. It goes so fast with you, man.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.